Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Cafe Esoterica Radio on Blog Talk Radio. Come on in, pull up a cozy chair, and listen to wonderment as we bring you the most enlightened guests on web radio. I am your hostess with the mostest, Sean Cohen. That's me, a psychic, medium, metaphysician, author of 4 books, teacher of esoteric knowledge for 37 years and counting, which is why I am so proud and honored to bring you the authors and practitioners in the know from the Mind, Body, and Spirit Compendium of Life, as well as experts in divination and holistic healing, fabulous tarot readers, wise and profound astrologers, and even the odd rock star, just for your edification and enlightenment. We've been on hiatus, but we're back in the saddle again and raring to go for our 4th season of Cafe Esoterica Radio, broadcasting to you live every Thursday at 7 to 8:30 p.m. UK time, 2 to 3:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, and worldwide, so find your time zone and dive in. Want to be part of the show? Please do. Call in on our new number, which is 858-956-3204. Chat in our chat room, which is located at the end of our landing page on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't find it there, just refresh your page and it will appear. Can't catch us live? Not to worry. You can find us on many formats like TuneIn, Podbean, Stitcher, and now Spotify. And you can watch me simultaneously broadcast our show every week live on YouTube. Just go to YouTube.com, put in the search Cafe Esoterica Radio, and you'll see me there live talking to you. So grab your latte, your cappuccino, perhaps a herbal tea, and your best friend, and trip the light fantastic with us once more. And as always, your table is reserved. So come on in. Welcome back, everyone. Here we are at Cafe Esoterica Radio, and we are live coming to you from London, England. It's 7 p.m. In the evening here in London. It's been a very cold and blustery day. We've had some interesting weather, I must say, and a few downpours, but apparently nothing like what's going on in California, where my guest tonight actually lives. We're going to talk about what's happening out there and many other things. I'll introduce her in a minute. Let me go back. I want to thank the lovely and very astute Martin, the author of the children's series, very magical series called The Ravens of Fairborn Hall. His books are all available on Amazon. And if you've got, you know, like I think he said 7 to 14-year-olds, great books to get, very magical, a bit Harry Potterish, but very, very, you know, he used a lot of real stuff in them. So it's quite fascinating to read to your children or have them read. And also, so his name is Martin Adams. Thank you very much, Martin, for coming last week. He was great. This week I have Catherine, but next week I have another Catherine. And next week, this is my show news now, before I introduce my guest tonight. You know, I do these shows in a series of what I call, you know, like a season, just like you'd have a TV season or, you know, I guess that's the way to say it. And I've been broadcasting every week, come rain, come shine. This is our 4th season. And next week is the last show of this season, which means that I am going to go on hiatus. See, in the intro, you heard we're on a hiatus, but we'll be back, or we're back. But actually, that was a new intro for that last. So I've been going strong about 5-6 months now. And I'm going to take a little break. It's coming up to Christmas.
once we get past Halloween, it's a minute and it's Thanksgiving in America, and the next minute and a half, it's Christmas, and then it's New Year's, and I'll be back in the new year with great guests, as I always have. And the theme of the show is Cafe Esoterica Radio, because I have people on who are in the mind, body, spirit compendium of life. So they're practitioners, they're authors, they're people who are visionaries, and they're amazing people who are experts in their field, experts in divination. If you would like to be on the show, all you have to do is send me an email at cafeesotericaradio@gmail.com. So there's two E's in there, cafe, C-A-F-E, right? And then another E, esoterica, at gmail.com. And if you're not sure, just Google it and you'll find it. I'd like to thank everyone who's been a wonderful guest in this season. We've had amazing, beautiful, profound guests, and we're going to have another one tonight. It's not easy to do what they do, and I don't think they get enough recognition, quite frankly. And that's why I started the show a couple years ago now. We're on our third year. And I think, I know how hard it is to be so-called enlightened. What is enlightenment? Why do I use that, enlightened guest? Because I use the term enlightenment in a way that it really means. It doesn't mean meditating for 400 years. It means to be awake, to understand consciousness, to understand what one's purpose is, to understand why you're here, what you're doing here, to contribute to the collective, to be part of the experience of coming back again and again and again and again, and understanding that we're a soul traveling through eternity, and we come here to make our lives better, but also to make other people's lives better. We are evolving and growing all the time through heartache and pain, through joy and happiness. Usually it happens through heartache and pain a lot more, but I'd love to thank my audience for listening. I know, because Blog Talk Radio shows me the stats after every show, who's listening, where the strongest listeners are. We have America is always at the top, which I'm very grateful. Being an American myself, I'm very proud to be an American. I'm not so sure about the politics these days, but I'll always be proud to be an American. And I live in London, and that's the next one, is the UK. So these two are higher. But to be able to be heard in places like Vietnam, Chile, Japan, Russia, I've mentioned this before. We picked up most of South America now is listening to Cafe Esoterica Radio. When I say most, I mean within each area, there are listeners scattered, okay? Australia, New Zealand, all the English-speaking countries, all of Europe, Greece and Italy and all of the Scandi countries, and Sweden and Denmark and Finland and it's just so wonderful to be able to have this platform. And that's why I really work hard at getting you the whole reason for the platform. The reason is to allow my guests to teach you something every week. They come on, they know these things. They're experts in their field. They're not just promoting themselves. That's the least of it. They are sharing their beautiful wisdom with you. So if you're listening to the show, congratulations, you're a smart cookie. You're listening to things that you're not going to hear on your average radio station. And you're not even going to hear on some of the paid radio stations, because this is all about metaphysics. This is all about spirituality. This is all about awakening and consciousness. So this is why my next guest is just perfect for this show. And I'll tell you what, her CV is absolutely stunning. She's probably, and I'm saying this because I've seen most of them, she's probably got the top amount of education as far as CVs go. I mean, Catherine Olivetti, MA, MSSW. She practices out of California, Northern California. But she has been, her CV is just beautiful. It's just loaded with licensing and certificates and a ton of professional publications and professional memberships. And she is a Jungian psychotherapist. She lectures. She's a dream expert. She's just written a wonderful book on dreams. Let me read you her bio, and then we'll bring Catherine up. And this is Catherine Olivetti. Catherine Olivetti is a Jungian analyst who earned an MA and MSW from Columbia University and completed psychoanalytic training at the C.G. Jung Institute of New York, where she became its president. How's that for starting at the bottom and working your way up? She completed family therapy training at the Philadelphia Child Guidance Clinic, completed the Institutes of Religion and Health program in pastoral counseling, a year-long course at Stanford University on the mind and the brain, and a leadership program with the Coach Training Institute. She taught and supervised at Yale Medical School and the C.G. Jung Institutes of New York, San Francisco, and Catania, Sicily. I probably didn't say that right. Catania, Sicily. From 2012 to 2018, Olivetti was the editor-in-chief of Jung Journal, Cultural and Psyche, and conducts an online seminar on writing and editing for Jungian analysts. Sorry. Her book, Dreamwork, 10 Lessons for Understanding Dreams, is available at Amazon as an ebook. She's lectured and written about dream work, clinical process, creativity, spirituality, writing, and editing. Additional areas of special interest are tarot, astrology, interspecies communication, which is amazing, cooking and gardening. Olivetti maintains a private practice in Atherton, California, and a website at www.catherineolivetti.com. You can also email her at catherineolivetti@gmail.com. Let me bring Catherine's mic up. Here we go. Welcome, Catherine. Catherine, welcome to our show.
Thank you, Dawn. I'm so happy to be here.
My God, are you wise? I loved reading all that about you. I didn't even know all that when I first met you, so that's really interesting.
Well, you know, I guess you would say that I'm a student of life, and if where there's something to learn, something new to learn, I go there.
You see, this in itself is, I'm just going to say this because I think it's important to hear. This is what makes the difference between a student and a master, is that you always seek knowledge and you always want to keep going. You don't stop at a plateau and just that's it. You crave knowledge. You long to learn more and learn more and learn more. And this is true mastery, in my opinion, you know?
Thanks.
You're very welcome. So, Catherine, let's go back. I always say this to my guests on the show, you know, how did it begin for you? So we know you have this outstanding CV and such education. What got you interested in psychology? How did you begin?
Well, I actually began my career as a teacher, and I taught 9-year-olds in fourth grade. And what I discovered, this was as a very young woman, right out of graduate school, what I discovered was that I did not really like teaching a large group, but I loved working one-on-one. And so I thought there were a few students in my class. I didn't think I was a very good teacher, but I thought there were a few students in my class who got had a really good year. And that was where I got my first hint that working individually with individual needs and figuring out what this person really needs, that's where I got my first clue that that was a direction I was going to go in life. So maybe that year I stopped. And I had a young family. I had two children. I was married, and I stayed home for a while raising children. And at a certain point, I felt stuck. And I went into therapy myself. And I think I really was like the therapy client from hell. Because I would go to the bookstore and I would get the therapy book, the books on therapy psychology out, and I would take them home. At that time, we bought paper books. And I would read them. I would be underlining in all the books. And the next therapy session I went to, I would say to the therapist, "Now, do you realize I have this? Have you read about that? Do you know this? Do you know that? Do you know this? Do you know that?" And poor thing, you know, he was like, "Well, no, but I'll read the book too if you think it's a good idea." And by and by, in that reading, I came upon Jung. And when I read about Jung's idea of the collective unconscious, I thought, that's it. I always knew this, even as a kid. I knew there was something universal, and I didn't have the language for it. I didn't have a way of even asking questions about it. But when I read that, I was in my late 20s. I thought, this is it, and this is the direction I'm going in. And I wanted to learn more about that. And so that was really that sort of my own therapy and reading about psychological things really became the doorway into a very, you know, I did, when I went back to school as in my late 20s, because I had to get another degree, that was the MSSW, I had to get another degree in order to become a therapist. That was the doorway in. And so from that, and I, at that time, I never expected to have a big career. I just wanted to do it. You know, and it turned out I ended up having a fairly, you know, extensive career as a psychotherapist.
Wow. Interesting. It's interesting, Catherine, because, you know, Jung is also, I mean, we could do a whole just on him easily, right?
Right.
And, you know, I think that Jung... The thing that I remember in my 20s when I started therapy myself at 19, and which is young.
Right, we were young.
My mother thought I was very depressed, and my mother thought that it was a good idea, and I was adamant it wasn't. But I tell you what, I got hooked. It was an amazing process to start talking about yourself and learn about who you are and what makes you tick, or what, you know, the observations that you get in therapy are priceless, really. And for
I was so curious. I was so curious, and I just decided very early on, I liked being a therapy client, but I thought, I think I'd like being a therapist also. You know, I thought I'd like both sides of it, which is true. I have. I've enjoyed of the couch, so to speak.
Well, we're going to talk about that process, and this is it, because for our listeners, right, if they've never done it, they're thinking about it. Today is National Mental Health Day. Who knew?
Really?
I mean, how about that for synchronicity? It is. It's National Mental Health Day. And,
wow.
I know. And there's, so, you know, we're going to talk about this, but let me just go back to the process of going into therapy, choosing a therapist, and then having the experience of therapy. therapy is like someone holding a mirror up to you, and you have to, and what's the, and I'll have you explain better, but I'm just saying for my listeners, if you've never done it and you're thinking about doing it, you know, I think you need to consider who the therapist is, because that's very important, isn't it, Catherine?
Right. It's very important. It's not an easy process of actually choosing a therapist, because there are some pitfalls, Sean. Sometimes the best way to find a therapist is if you know someone who saw a therapist, and you recognize that they have grown and they've changed and they've improved their lives. That is the best recommendation you can have. One of the problems with choosing a therapist is sometimes you'll get maybe two or three names, and you'll go see this one, you'll go see that one, and you're like, well, I really feel the most comfortable with this person. Sometimes the reason you feel comfortable is that it fits with an old problematic pattern. And you end up, the person who makes you feel a little bit uncomfortable might actually be the better choice. So it's hard. It's hard to find the right person.
I think that's true. I think you're right. You know, you have to, it's somebody who you feel you can trust, but someone who has a penetrating insight to see what's going on, you know, really see what's going on, right?
Right.
And go on.
Right, because if you have a therapist who, you know, who sort of just holds your hand and tells you, makes you feel good all the time, you may not be getting any place. I had to laugh. When I was in New York, when I was living and practicing in New York, I had, I often had a group, more than one group of people who were in therapy with me, and then I would see them in group therapy also. And one day they were laughing, and one of them said something like, you know, I have a friend, and she says every time she leaves therapy, she feels better. And I told her, every time I leave therapy with Catherine, I feel terrible. And the group started laughing. They go, yeah, I know what you mean. I feel terrible sometimes too. And so they started a conversation about what it felt like to be challenged, what it felt like to have somebody see into the corners that you were, where you were hiding things. And so it's not always comfortable and feel good process, you know? You have to be.
You have to be very, you have to be open. You have to be willing, I think. But you also have to listen and observe not only what the therapist says, but what you feel and what you... Some people are so disconnected from their feelings. They're so disconnected from their emotions. Even their memories of childhood. It's very difficult to get back there. But it can be done, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
This is the $9 million question. Good therapist. Is it nurture or nature which makes us who we are?
Well, I think we're learning more and more, Sean, about how things are genetically hardwired into us. Many years ago, I had a woman, there was a woman analyst in Israel. Her name was Yael Hoff. She was a wonderful woman, but she was an expert in reading the hand. And she would come to New York every year, and I would send my clients to her, and it was kind of like a report card on therapy. She would look at the hand, and she would say, oh, I see you've worked hard on this. Oh, I see you've worked hard on that. I wouldn't tell her a thing. And she could tell from looking at the hand what issues were improved, what complexes had quieted down. And one of the other things that she did is she could look at a hand and she could tell what characteristics were hardwired in. And so if somebody was, let's say, very curious, she would see that in the hand and she goes, that is never going to change. Or if someone was really sort of stubborn or persistent, she would say, that is never going to change. And so it was wonderful to know the things that were hardwired in, because then you can use them in their highest form. I mean, it's not good to be stubborn sometimes, but sometimes it's really good to be persistent, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's really important. And I mean, it's one of the things, you know, a good therapy helps a person to sort out about what is intrinsically me and what is it that has been conditioned into me by the way I was nurtured or not nurtured. So it's, you know, it's a combination. It's always a combination of both of those things.
Okay. I would imagine it is a combination. And they're learning so much now about DNA. You know, DNA is, everyone's running and getting DNA tested for their heritage, right? And they're finding out things about that they didn't even know, you know, and I am a highly sensitive person, and this is a new sort of sweeping the world. You know, Elaine, I think Aronson or whatever her surname is, Aaron, A-R-O-N, I think it's Aronson, but I'm not sure. She wrote a book, HSP, Highly Sensitive Person. And children are already born, most of them very, you know, highly sensitive. Everything's a sensual stimuli, right?
Right.
And I was listening to this summit. I mean, I listen to a lot of these free summits online. And I was listening to this summit called the Sensitivity Summit, which is still going on. And I heard the most amazing thing, because my mother used to say to me all the time, hey, you're so sensitive. You know, making you feel shameful about something that's truly natural to you, right?
Right.
And I never knew this. Catherine, this was a million trillion, like, wows that went off in my head when I heard this. That they are doing all this, you know, scientific study now on highly sensitive people. That's why we have psychics and shamans and people who tuned in to these levels and palm reading, you know. Because they do exist. We're all over the world, and we've always been here throughout history, right? And,
right.
And what did they find? Their brain is shaped differently.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the brain, the way the brain is shaped is for empaths and highly sensitive people is completely different than your average person.
Yeah.
And so that's why I asked you that question, because I thought to myself, what if the entire thing, you know, it's soul too, isn't it? Your soul comes back in the body and, you know, experiences whatever. But I was very shocked to find out that actually, you know, like Lady Gaga, I was born that way. You know what I mean? The shape of my brain. Very interesting stuff going on there in the old research department of life.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, one of the most interesting pieces of research that I read recently was, it had to do with rats, I think. I think it was rats. Rats naturally like a cherry, like to eat cherries. So what they did is they conditioned the rats, you know, they gave them some kind of bad experience, and they associated it with the cherries. And soon the rats that naturally like cherries were now afraid of the cherries. The interest, and that's just operant conditioning, you know, that's not a new thing. But what was new is that the next generations of rats, even though they hadn't been exposed to the negative thing, they were afraid of cherries. And so what it's really telling us is that there is transmission from that anxiety, fear, trauma, negative experiences are actually transmitted generation to generation, even though the next generation hasn't had a direct experience of the trauma.
Yeah, this reminds me. I heard something, and maybe this just backs it up too. Did you hear that every person carries 14 generations of their ancestors' trauma in them?
I hadn't heard that, the specific 14 generations, but I'm sure that's what it means in the Bible when it says that the sins of the father shall be carried on for seven generations, you know?
Yeah. Well, now I thought it was seven generations too, which is long enough, really.
But
apparently, again, doing all this DNA testing, they figured out somehow, and I can't tell you the study because I can't remember it, but I wish I'd, you know, saved it. I had it somewhere, and I was shocked. 14 generations, my God, you don't have a choice. You don't have a, you know, not a choice. You don't have a chance, really, because I'm just thinking, we all think about ourselves when we read these things, and, you know, the Jewish, the Irish, and the Scottish, in my family, everybody's a victim. Everybody's had a long suffering history, you know?
Right, you know, Sean, but the thing, I mean, one of the things that is hopeful, I would say, about that is that sometimes, and this is where, you know, people who are specialists in past life regressions and who have the capacity to psychically reach back other generations, or it also sometimes comes through a dream, you know, that that the history, that the ancestors' history comes through, and we can work on it. We can, even once we recognize, oh, this isn't exactly my personal history, but this is coming through. We can heal past traumas when we work on them today.
Which is great. Now, on that note, guess what? Mm. It's time for our first musical break. We're going to have a little wee one. It's not long at all, 2 minutes and 27 seconds, because Catherine's so fascinating. Can't wait to go back and talk to her. So, Catherine, anyone who's listening out there in listening land, go get yourself a cuppa and come on back. Our wonderful and wise guest is Jungian psychotherapist Catherine Olivetti, and she's written a book on dreams. We're going to talk about your dreams too. Want to give Bob in the chat room here a big hello. He's from down under, and we're going to go down under. We're going to go into that unconscious, subconscious realm when we come back. And here is just the theme of the show. The theme of the show is about dreams and psychology. So All I Have to Do Is Dream by the Everly Brothers. And we'll be back.
Dream. Is dream.
Okay, I don't know. It just cut out for a second there. But anyway, here we are. We're back with Catherine Olivetti, who is a Jungian psychotherapist and the author of Dreamwork, 10 Lessons for Understanding Dreams, which is available at Amazon as an ebook. So why not download it and learn all about your dreams? We're going to learn some more. If you hear me typing away, it's because Bob is in the chat room and he is talking to me, so I'm just gently typing back to him. Okay, let's go back to Catherine. Now, Catherine, let's talk a little bit. I want to go into what dreams are, how we analyze them, all that good stuff. But before we jump in there, I'd really like to talk just one more second about the wonderful Carl Jung. He was, sure. You know, he was a, first of all, he died in the 60s, didn't he? 1962, was it?
Yeah, I think it was 61, but in the early 60s.
Early 60s, right? And he was a student of Freud originally.
Well, actually, he wasn't a student of Freud's. He was a psychiatrist in Switzerland, and he worked at a hospital called the Bergolzoi Hospital. And he was already a well-established psychiatrist. He worked with the Bergolzoi was a mental hospital that had some very, you know, seriously ill people. And what happened was he got a hold of Freud's book, The Interpretation of Dreams. And when he read that, he was extremely taken by it. And he contacted Freud. And the two of them set up a collaboration. And they had a correspondence and a collaboration that went back and forth. Freud was in Vienna. Jung was in Switzerland, and they went back and forth, and they collaborated for about 12 years, and until they disagreed on the nature of the unconscious. Freud felt that the unconscious was basically a receptacle for all of the taboo wishes and all the dark things that each person felt. And Jung felt the unconscious was much bigger than that, that it was in fact the receptacle for those things, but it was also the source of all creativity and also a universal uniting spiritual experience where we all can tap into, and this was his idea of the collective unconscious, where each one of us is connected to everyone else by virtue of that collective unconscious that's common to all of us. And he based that idea on the fact that people in different cultures had basically some of the same stories and even without knowing about the other culture. You know, so
that whole idea of the collective unconscious is fascinating, right?
And Freud wanted Jung to be kind of his heir apparent, but the thing is, they were two geniuses, you know, two big personalities, two geniuses, and I think Freud really wanted, he was the older, and I think he wanted Jung to be more like his student. But Jung would have nothing to do with it. And so after about 12 years, they separated. They broke up their friendship. And it was, the legacy of that was that the Freudians and the Jungians for many years had nothing to do with one another.
Yes, I thought there was a rivalry there or, you know, a kind of, Freud, you know, I think Freud was really into the whole, everything's about a penis, everything's about, you know, repressed sex. And that's the shortcut version of it. And Jung was much more spiritual.
Yeah. Jung really felt that Freud felt that the bedrock of the unconscious was sexuality. And Jung felt the bedrock of the unconscious was not sexuality, it was spirituality.
Yeah. So one of the things that I, when I read quite a few books on both, but I, you know, in his memoirs, Jung talks about having a clearly mediumistic experience.
Oh yeah, and his mother was very mediumistic.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting that if you speak to most Jungian therapists, they are tuned in. They think, okay, this could happen.
Right.
Person's not crazy talking to a dead person. You know what I mean? But which is great, which is one of the things I loved about him. And I was drawn to him very strongly. And then, of course, the archetypes and all about the archetypes. And the tarot is made up of all these archetypes.
Right, right.
So, you know, it's a very, very powerful story. If you haven't read any books by Jung, I would highly recommend, and I'm sure Catherine, you would recommend. Why don't I let you recommend? What should the audience start with?
Well, one of the things that I love is the book that Jung wrote himself called Memories, Dreams, and Reflections.
Yeah, that's the one I was speaking of.
It tells about his story. Some of his writings, I mean, the collected works is, I think, 20 volumes of very dense material. And unless you're really a serious student, I wouldn't recommend the collected works. But there are other interesting books. Like there's a book called Why We Read Jung. I can't bring the author to mind right now. And also the Red Book got a lot of publicity.
Yeah.
And the Sonu Sambhashanti, who was the editor for the Red Book, he's a wonderful man. Very, oh my gosh, so intelligent and so knowledgeable about Jung. The introduction to that book is also really, it's accessible. It's very interesting. And it tells you a lot about Jung and his the way he viewed the psyche.
It's very, I mean, we these are such rich subjects, very rich, very deep, and which I adore, I love, I'm completely hooked, you know. And we have two lovely people in the chat room who are talking to each other. Hello, Crystal Bowles, Gretna. And she's saying hi to everyone, and she's also saying hi to Bob, who's in the chat room. So good that these guys are talking, because they're asking loads of questions about dreams and stuff, which we'll get to. Let me go back to why do we dream, Catherine? What is the, I mean, I know, but, you know, for our audience, what is the reason that the brain dreams?
Okay, so I'm gonna tell you my version, because the truth, the bottom line is we don't really know. It's not, it's really not understood. And there are certain scientists who say dreams don't mean anything. They're just neurons firing in the brain while we sleep. And, you know, I choose not to include that point of view as something that I subscribe to, because my experience tells me so much otherwise.
Oh, yes, so, mine too.
This is what I would say. You know, I had a very wonderful experience one time of being able to watch a cut that was made in the skin under a microscope. And when the skin opened, just a tiny bit, you could see all of the little cells. And as soon as that cut happened, the little cells were like, it was like a little army, that they were all marching toward the cut and grabbing together to seal that cut over. And it was something I will never forget, because it made me understand the body is a self-healing organism. It has an instinct for self-healing. And I can see absolutely no reason why dreams and our mental capacities would not be the same. I cannot not imagine that our blood cells would behave one way and something else could behave another way. And so I really believe that the dreams are the psyche's way of pointing us in the direction of self-healing. And that if we that the language, you know, we don't understand. I mean, we can't talk to a cell. We don't understand the way those cells communicated to one another. We don't know how that happened. And the dreams are a little bit like that. It speaks its own language. And so what we need to do is we need to try to enter into the language of the dream, which is it's a symbolic language. It's a language of images, and which is different from a language of words. And so my experience, both as an individual but also as a therapist, is that if people will pay attention to their dreams, the dreams come from the deepest part of the psyche, and the soul, or what Jung called the self with the big capital S, the archetype of wholeness, that the dreams are always pointing us in that direction. And we can access that, you know, if we're open to it and we're willing to struggle a little bit with trying to learn a language that we don't exactly know as well as we know the mother tongue we were born into.
Very interesting. In my meta classes, I do teach dream symbology, and I make my students, I mean, I don't make them, but I ask them to keep a dream journal for the entire 24 weeks that we're doing Metaphysics 1 and then Metaphysics 2. And every time we meet, and you know, once a week, right, they have to bring a dream in.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I do this is because I want to see if they're actually, their psyche is beginning to evolve.
Mm-hmm.
And what problems are in the way of that evolution. So, for instance, and I just want to check with you, because this is how I've done it. You know, dreams are three, like, this is what I learned, okay? And I'm sure you know more, but I'm just saying that what I learned is, and I always love my dreams, and I have boxes filled with dream journals from since I was a teenager, okay? And when I started therapy at 19, I really started to pay attention to my dreams. So, you know, that's a lot of dreams. And they have helped me, and they've been very psychic and certainly taught me that I was psychic. You know, I'd have prophetic dreams. They'd come true. And my God, I dreamt that last week, you know, whatever. But I told my students this, and that dreams can come three ways. It can be literal. You dream you have a flat tire and you go outside and your car has a flat tire. That's one. Two, they can be symbolic. You dream you have a flat tire, you go outside and there is no flat tire in your car, but boy, are you tired. Your body is tired. Or they could be psychic, the third one, which is, You go outside, you don't have a flat tire, and your body's pretty different. But, you know, within driving a couple miles, you get a flat tire.
Right.
And that kind of summed it up for me, you know. Right. I'm sure there's much more than that, but that's kind of what I was...
I think that's a really nice approach. And the one thing I would add, Sean, is that third one about that it could be prophetic that you're going to get a tire. It could be prophetic also at the symbolic level, so that it's not just that you actually are going to get a flat tire, but that you're running out of steam, or that you're doing something that's going to make you tired or make you not be able to move forward. That's going to slow you down. You know, and so I would say in general, the way I approach dreams is that that the dreams are usually ahead of the ego, ahead of the conscious ego. And so in that sense, they're almost, I would say they're almost all prophetic in a certain way.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to deliver a message. they're trying to deliver a message. They're trying to communicate something from the soul, from the deepest part of the self to the ego. Mm. And it's really, they're trying to help a person take the best possible next steps that they can. I guess that's where I would say that they're almost always a little bit prophetic, sort of pointing us in the right direction in the future.
Well, this is, okay, this leads me to, this is, Catherine, I'm so happy you're on my show. God, you're so wise and interesting. I'm just loving all this. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I just want to go to nightmares now and night terrors in children. So, okay, if our dreams, let me just say this. If our dreams are meant to be, they're helping us on a psychological or spiritual level or even a physical level, then why do we have nightmares? And why do children have night terrors? They're horrible.
Okay, there's a big difference between night terrors and nightmares. And okay. Night terrors are where a child has gets into a dream state, and even when you wake the child up, that you can't get them out of it.
Mm.
And we don't know for sure, you know, the science of all of this, but one of the ways of understanding the night terrors in children is that is in children that the veil between the inside and outside, the inner world, the outer world, is much thinner than it is for grown-ups. And so it's very hard, that's why they can enter into make-believe play so easily, is because for them, there's not such a differentiated boundary between what's real and what's make-believe. And so I think that part of that is how they get stuck in a night terror and can't get out, is that they've gotten stuck on the one side and they can't get back to reality. But most children out there, I would say that they're not, if you have a child who has night terrors, you want to comfort the child, you want to try to wake them up, you use sensei things, get a drink of water, rub the back, talk to them, sing them a comforting song. You want to do something to try to bring them back into an awake reality state. But it's not a symptom of something drastically wrong. Some children have them, some don't.
Just interject this. My daughter, God bless her, she used to go to sleep at night, and she went to her bedroom just to check everything's okay, and she would be talking away in a language, and I mean, not even a human language. I don't even know what languages what was. Because I know quite a few languages, and I've traveled a lot, and I used to say, what the hell? What language is that? And, you know, and her whole face, her eyes were closed, but her whole face would be animated, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I used to say to her, sometimes I'd wake her up because I think, you know, what's happening here? Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah, the thing is, I think it is that state of, and there are people, where the boundary between sort of the inner imaginative world and the outer concrete world, where it's very thin and they go kind of back and forth really easily. And I suspect that she's one of those kinds of people.
Yes, my daughter's very psychic. But you know, she was about 7, 8. And when she was little, even younger, really, 4, 3, she's talking away in her sleep. Now, my brother, I'll just say this while we're on the dream state. My younger brother had terrible sleepwalking. He would get up in the middle of the night. He would be absolutely eyes closed. or eyes wide open, but still be asleep dreaming, and he'd be walking out the front door. I caught him so many times. My mother caught him. And,
yeah.
You know, how does that work? How does that mechanism work?
Well, you know, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, Sean. It's being in that, that REM state, and not being able to come out of it, even though, you know, most people, you know, if they're in that state and you turn on a light or you call them, they quickly come into an awake state. But some people don't. Some people are really deep, deep in that place, and they don't come out so easy.
Fascinating, isn't it? It's just so interesting. I would love to know what happens.
You know, I think some of this, you know, in time, I think with all of the new research on the brain and being able to look at the brain when certain things are happening through the, you know, the MRIs and CAT scans and whatnot, we're going to know more. We're going to learn a lot more. I remember, I guess it was Dr. Kandel, who was at Columbia University, who had won the Nobel Prize for his research into the neurobiology. Goes back a few years ago, but he said, we've only just got the first drop of knowledge about the brain and the way the brain works. And so there's so much more that we're going to learn in time.
Okay, we're coming up towards the next musical break. Weirdly enough, it's flying by, Catherine. I want to talk about nightmares for 1 second, but people, if you want your dream analyzed, our wonderful guest, Catherine Olivetti, I hope will be okay to do this. I didn't ask her.
I'm very happy to do that.
Okay, so the call-in number for any of you outside of the United States, you've got to call into the United States. Use the code 001, then dial area 8-956-3204. We might have some people in the chat room who want to have their dreams analyzed. But anyway, we'll go back. I'm gonna play a song in 3 minutes. So I'm gonna wrap up our little conversation, and then take the next song break, and then we'll come back for the last half hour. My God, it's just flown by, it always does. So Catherine, what about nightmares? Talk to us about nightmares. Why do they happen?
As a therapist, when a client comes in and says, "Oh, I've had a nightmare," nothing makes me happier. Because the nightmare is only a nightmare from one point of view. So that the dreamer who appears in the dream as me, the I of the dream, the person who is I, the Catherine, if it's my nightmare, the Catherine in the dream is the one for whom it's a nightmare. The perpetrator who's chasing me, or the lion who's chasing after me, is not having a nightmare. And so it's very important to understand that a nightmare is really challenging a current state of being, because my current identity, my sense of self, the sense of self that I have today, always wants to be the same tomorrow. It does not want to change. And the nightmare is one of the harbingers, the change of the sense of self is coming. And to the awake ego, it's terrifying.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's terrifying. So I don't want, so let's say, let's say I'm being chased by a tiger. If I could wake up sweaty and scared and my heart's racing. And I think, wow, why am I being chased by a tiger? Well, if I know about a tiger is a very fierce animal. And a tiger is also a solitary animal. And so if the energy of the tiger is trying to get me, it may be a fierce sense of independence or a fierce kind of solitude or going my own way in a very ferocious kind of way might not fit with the self I feel like myself to be today. So if I'm like a really nice, polite, caring person, the idea of incorporating that kind of energy into my identity as a self is terrifying.
That's, again, I'm lost for words. Fascinating, fascinating. Okay, Catherine, listen, we're going to take, I'm sorry, I'm going to put the plugs in for the musical break. Let me take a little break. We have a great song. I love this song, Dreamer by Supertramp. All the songs are about dreams. We're on a theme here. We're rolling on a theme. And we'll be back with the lovely Catherine Olivetti, wise master of dream analysis. And she's written her own book, Catherine, which is Dreamwork, 10 Lessons for Understanding Dreams, which is available on Amazon for download, an ebook. And also, Catherine's got her own website. You can go into therapy with her if you like. So we'll come back in 3 minutes and 30 seconds with Supertramp's Dreamer.
Bye.
God, I love Supertramp. I love Roger Hodgson's talent. It's just outstanding. And I saw them when I was a teenager. And the stuff is still going strong. Supertramp, Dreamer. Okay, we have questions. We have a caller. I just want to, before we pick up this caller, let me just talk a little bit about, I have so many questions here. I'm just now scanning to see which ones I could actually jump in there. You know, in the family system, Catherine, and they do the, like the dysfunctional family system. I wanted to ask you about things like narcissism and why it's on the rise. And it's really on the rise. I think it's gone up like 70%.
Yeah.
Is this from technology?
I don't know the answer to that question, Sean. I think that it has something to do. The antidote to narcissism, of course, is empathy.
Mm.
You know, when you're aware that another person has feelings, and you know something makes you sad, that you could have an impact on someone else that would make them feel sad. That ability to be empathic is what keeps us really connected to one another. And so it certainly is possible that technology reduces the ability to be empathic with other people.
And how will this affect our dreams? You see, because I think, you know, I mean, this is a big question, I know, and we're not going to have enough time to really answer it, but you know, my fear, let me just cut to the chase. My fear is when I see children, young children on Instagram, you know, constantly putting pictures up of themselves, or teenagers or young adults, you know, there's kids who grow up with a phone today. They don't know how to have a conversation. It's really worrying. Go on.
Yeah, I think that is, you know, that, I mean, parental responsibility for, you know, somehow restricting screen time and making sure that there's ample opportunity for face-to-face interaction with children. I mean, I think that really is important.
I think that's true, that you have to have these, you have to spend time with your children. There's no question about that. There's no question. But in today's busy society, the mother works, the father works, you know, it's very difficult sometimes. But anyway, okay, we're going to go. Catherine, are you ready to take a call?
Sure. But
okay,
Margaret,
there
was one thing I wanted to say about narcissism.
Yes.
That's kind of tricky because as a therapist, narcissists aren't who walk into the office. It's usually the people around the narcissist, because the narcissist doesn't feel bad. The narcissist makes other people feel bad.
Yes.
So therapists aren't that astute at working with narcissists because they don't come for therapy.
Right. Well, they say there's no cure for them either, which is rather, you know, difficult. Or they just can't be bothered to work on themselves because they're so sure they're right.
Unless they begin to hurt, it becomes possible to work on it.
But if they're
mostly just making other people hurt, they're not that amenable to treatment.
Very interesting subject. Okay, so I'm going to go to our caller, and you're coming up with all the ones. That's a Skype call. Hello, caller. You're on the air. Give us your name. What's your name?
G'day,
and what's
Sean.
Your question?
Good day, Catherine. This is Bob from the Whitsunday Islands in Australia.
Okay, Bob. I see you in the chat room. What's your question for Catherine?
I don't really have a question. I just I'd just like to make a statement as a response to the dialogue that's gone on today. And I'm loving the show. And just for me, where I am in my own journey, I've come to the conclusion that we are all Sue, S-U-E, and that's sovereign, unique, and equal. And that the universe operates under the KISS principle, which is keep it simple, sovereign. And everything else just flows from that for me. What I'm going to share may sound controversial, but it's just my reality, my truth. And I thank you both for sharing your own unique reality. But for me, Descartes was wrong when he said, I think, therefore I am. Because for me, it's I feel, therefore I am. I experience this physical existence through my senses. I feel the breeze on my skin. I feel the warmth of the sunshine on my skin. I smell the beautiful tang of the rotting mangoes through my sense of smell. So for me, it's I feel, therefore I am. And for me, feelings are healings. I spent 20 years trying to think my way out of depression and could not do it. The only way I got through was to actually feel my way through whatever was coming up. So for me, feelings are healings. And within the silence of my heart, I found a place I call my knowing. And my knowing has no words. It's a feeling, it's a sensation. But through that place, I have a growing connection to the place I call the universal library of all that there is to know. And that's where I get my knowing from. And so for me, and I have an amazing intellect, but that's just a tool that I use when I choose. But for me, I prefer knowing to knowledge. And I'm not a religious person. For me, all religions are about control. Hey, they even call you the flock. But I believe I'm a very spiritual person. And I like the Bible because there's some classics in there. Like, say, I am the way, the truth, the light. Now, for me, that was not the claim of Jesus. That was him telling each and every one of us to shout that out individually, that I am the way, the truth, the light, and you. For the kingdom of heaven resides within, and I have found my own Garden of Eden. I create my life. And the other line I like in the Bible, the story in the Bible, is Adam and Eve were kicked out of paradise.
Bob, listen to me for a second, sweetheart. We only have very little time left, and it's nice that you're telling us about this, but we're on... The subject tonight is dreams, okay? And I can't give you the whole show. You understand? So if you don't have a dream for Catherine,
I'll close now.
Okay.
I'll close.
It's great what you're saying, but you know, I need to get back to my guest. All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Keep listening, bye. Thank you for calling in. Okay, Catherine, I have a dream. Yes. I have a dream for you. You want a dream? I'll give you a dream. I had a dream not long ago.
Yes, I'd love to have a dream.
I had a dream probably 3 weeks ago, if that. Now, you're into tarot, so you're probably into astrology too. And I'm an Aries, but I've got Capricorn rising, which means I've got Pluto on my head, basically. Pluto is and Saturn are right on my ascendant, and that's nobody wants that in their first house. But anyway, I digress. So I had this dream. It was a very bizarre dream, and even I wasn't quite sure what it was saying. And so I had a dream that I walked along what looked like a crypt, a graveyard, but it wasn't a graveyard. It was, like a bathtub, porcelain, but it was shaped in like a grave. Does that make sense? Like a coffin,
Yeah, it sounds like, yeah, those stone coffins that you see in Rome and Egypt.
Yes,
and,
very, yes, yeah. It was very oldie worldy kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And this particular thing, this coffin, whatever you want to call it, was filled with crystal blue water, like the Mediterranean, you know, very clear turquoise, or maybe like the Bahamas, you know, or Florida, I don't know, you know, something like that. But it wasn't empty. There was a man floating in it. There was a man from his head to his toes. He was a young man. I didn't recognize him. And he said to me something like, boy, I'll bet you want to come in here and dive deep. And this thing went really deep, like really deep. Like I knew it was, you know, if I went in there, I'd drown, you know. And, well, there's a lot of stuff in there, but I woke up and I was thinking to myself, wow, that's quite profound.
Right. Was this a nightmare, Sean, or was it just a dream?
It wasn't a nightmare. It was an observation. I didn't feel scared. I just felt like, you know, as a young man, he reminded me a bit of an astrologer I know.
Yeah.
But it wasn't him.
And my sense of the dream is that the combination of the crypt together with the beautiful water,
yeah.
You know, it's bringing, I mean, the beautiful blue water of the Caribbean or whatever, the ocean is the source of all life.
Mm.
And it's being contained in something that contains the dead body after we're gone, right? And
yes.
So I would say it's kind of like a tarot reading where you pull the death card. It's not that you're going to die. It's that something, there's new life in some ending. Something is ending so that something new can come into being.
Yeah.
And I would say that even with Pluto on the ascendant, it's a dream in a way, to me, is like Pluto on the ascendant.
Yeah.
It's really saying, yeah, this is hard, and yeah, this is taking you down, but it's in service of new life. It's in service of something emerging, and it's a little scary. It's a little scary to get into that. It's a I would say it's a dream that promises a transformative experience.
Wow. Because with Pluto and Saturn transiting my first house, and I have Moon in Aquarius, so the Pluto will be in there probably the rest of my life, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And which is probably why I thought, my God, it's so deep. It goes on forever, you know?
Yes, right. And the thing is, the Pluto transits, you know, I've had my own. They're, as we both know, they're difficult. They're not transformation by la-di-da. You know, their transformations break down and break through.
Yes, yes. Break down and break through. But what? Who was he? Was he Hades? Who the hell was he? Sort of inviting me in. Mr. Pluto?
Well, the thing is, he's floating. He's not dead. He's in the crypt. He's not dead. I think he's like an angel. You know, he's like a wise energy. A wise energy that's saying that the ego is like, oh my God, I don't want to get into that deep water. The I of the dream, the self of the dream is like, oh my God, I'm walking by a crypt and it's so deep. And what if I get in there? I'll probably drown. And
right.
And that is the current sense of self. The self I am today, and I like being, and the self I'm comfortable being today. Is not as happy about this as the guy in the crypt saying, "Come on in, come on in. It's going to be beautiful here." I think something new is on the horizon for you, Sean. Something wonderful.
Hmm. Well, my daughter's grown up, and she lives in a different city, and she's got a job and a boyfriend and a whole life, and you know, I was a single parent for a long time. And so that's the end of one chapter of my life in a way. So I can understand that, really. That does make sense. But I was who he was, and he's too young from, you know, this particular.
How old is he?
He looked about, I don't know, late 20s, somewhere in there, early 30s.
Right, so I would look back to, if you say 30, I would look back to 30 years ago. Was there anything that started then that didn't come to fulfillment, or that had to be let go of, or was there any field of interest or any study or any relationship, or did anything begin then and not have a chance to really have its life?
Well, that's a good question. 30 years ago. Well, I came to London in 1985. That's more than 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. Much more, right? And so, you know, 85, 95, 2005, 2015 was 30 years ago. So it's 34 mm-hmm. years I've lived in London, going on 35. And so what was that? Do I have to think?
Did anything have to be let go of so that you could do that? Because the crypt suggests that something had to die. That there was something that was ready to be let. Something was let go of, or had to be let go of, or could be let go of. Because the thing is, what's going on is there's life in the crypt.
Yeah, he's alive, that person.
Yeah, exactly. And the water is beautiful. And the water is very alive and beautiful.
Yeah. So what a dream, huh? So I have to think about what I let go of 30 years ago or around that time. I mean, I never let go of my American citizen. I still have an American passport, but I have moved here and I've made my home.
Yeah. Maybe it's even something, Sean, something that you thought had died, or that you thought was over, something that you thought was over that actually has some very deep and interesting life left in it.
Well, Catherine, I'm going to have to ponder that. I really, I'll have to sit down and really think, but thank you for that. That's a very profound insight.
Yeah, well, the thing that I'm sure you'll have other dreams in response to this, you know, conversation we just had that will further illuminate, you know, or, you know, you do a reading on what was, I think something was let go, something that maybe you thought was dead, or something you thought was over, or you thought had no more life, and it has more life than you thought.
Well, this then brings me to, you know, we can have dreams of spirit people. We can have dreams of, I mean, you've mentioned that guy was probably an angel or a guide of some kind.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've had many, many dreams about, you know, I have a couple, by the way, I have a couple dead boyfriends. You know what I mean? So, yeah. I mean, that in itself.
It's interesting. My daughter once had a dream where one of her uncles died. And she dreamed that it was Christmas time and we were all together. And he came to the window and he just tapped on the window. And she looked and she saw her Uncle Ed was there. And she's like, oh, why did you come, you know? And he said, oh, I just wanted you to know that I'm okay. Just tell everybody that I'm fine. Now, a dream like that, Sean, I think is a visitation. That is definitely spirit communicating with those of us on this side of the veil, you know, and the veil opens now and then, you know, and something comes through.
Okay, it's true. I've had many myself. You know what, Catherine? We're out of time. Can you believe that?
No.
I have 5 minutes left. I have to wrap up the show and play the music, you see, so it's all timed. Catherine, thank you so much for being on my show. I've absolutely loved every second of it. Will you come back in the new year and do more?
Of course, I'd be delighted to. Anything you would send for me too.
I'd love to have you back. And tell everyone your website and how they can talk to you or learn more from you.
Yeah, my website is just my name, www.KatherineOlivetti, KatherineOlivetti.com. And, you know, one of the things I do love to do, Sean, is I love to do just a single dream consultation where somebody says, I have a dream. I want to work on one dream. I don't want to be in therapy, but I had this dream that, you know, and I love doing those single session dream consultations. So if anybody is interested in that, they can get in touch with me.
Okay, fabulous. Okay, Catherine, I have to wrap up the show. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, Catherine. I just want to thank Sue in the chat room, Crystal Bowl, Gretna, and also Bob who called in. I'm sorry to cut you off there, Bob, but we were talking about dreams, really. So, you know, when we start talking about what we're doing on the old esoteric level, I promise you, you can come on and talk all you want. Okay, I'm going to wrap up the show by saying thank you to all our listeners worldwide. We have one more show left in the season. Next week, it's Catherine McIntyre, who is a channeler, and she's channeled Henry David Thoreau. Can you believe that? And her book is called The Thoreau Whisperer. And wow, what a great sort of, as we're edging to All Hallows Eve or Halloween, that's going to be a lot of, you know, very interesting stuff. That's on the 17th. Next Thursday. And again, thank you to Catherine. I'm going to read in this metaphysical moment. Here we go. Dreaming the night away, within the confines of my consciousness, my hidden subconscious comes to light. Every single night, like a play, which unfolds as the story reveals itself in the theater of my mind. It brings forth all the scenery, unresolved stories, even traumas and conundrums my mind cannot yet release, heal, or understand. But its mission is to make me see, make me understand, to become wise, aware, and balanced. In this metaphysical moment, I listen to my dreams because I know they are like my very own personal therapist, helping me to understand or interpret, or even warning me about something. They can also reveal past lives to me or what someone's real intentions are towards me. So this information helps me to not make harmful mistakes. My departed loved ones can come to me in my dreams and speak to me, even my pets, also angels and spirit guides. So I am able to get help when I need it or just pertinent information. I write down my dreams every day when I wake up, keeping a dream journal and dating it so I can see, maybe even years later, what the messages meant. Thank you, dreams. Be a dreamer who listens and learns from your dreams, and you will be so much more the wiser. Having kept dream journals since I was a teenager, I know I am. Thank you, Catherine Olivetti. Please, people, have a great week, and we'll see you next week. And we're going out with Dreams by the Cranberries. And here we go. Okay, everyone, I'm just finishing up here. There's a nice person, Du Flamingo, Newgate, Jay Newgate, hello. Just telling him about the other shows that we have available at Cafe Esoterica Radio. Thank you, everyone, for coming, and God bless, and good day, good night, good evening, wherever you are in the world. And see you next week, last show of the season, so do come, right? We won't have any more shows till January, and we'll see you then. Bye for now.